Our Gemara says that there was a machlokas about Pilegesh Begiva. What caused this very unfortunate situation of Pilegesh Begiva? There was something that the wife of the man did that upset the man and caused the woman to run away, and that led to the whole story of Pilegesh Begiva. One opinion was there was some type of hygienic issue that she didn't take care of with her body hair. The other opinion is that there was a fly that she allowed to get into the food that upset her husband very much. And whichever one it was, the husband inappropriately, as the Gemara points out, because you're not supposed to have Eimin Yaseira in your house, he inappropriately overreacted, and because of that, it led to the whole story of Pilegesh Begiva. So we have two opinions there. What set him off? Was it the hair, or was it the fly? And the Gemara says that in Shamayim they were discussing this, and Elu v'Elu divrei Elokim chayim. Elu v'Elu, these and these are the words of the living God. Now the question is, what in the world does that mean? Elu v'Elu divrei Elokim chayim. Does that mean that they're both right? If it means that they're both right, I wouldn't have written in such a poetic way. I would have just wrote, Elu v'Elu sotkin. Elu v'Elu nechonim. What do you mean they're both words of the living God? So we need to understand what that expression means. And also, what does it mean that they're both right? If it really means that they're both right, how can they both be right? Either it was a hare or it was a fly. Which one was it? So the starting point for the discussion of Elu v'Elu divrei Elokim chayim, that expression comes up a couple of times in Shas, not so many times, but it comes up occasionally. So one of them is the famous discussion in the Gemara in Erevin. Even if you don't know it's in Erevin, you're all familiar with it when you read it today. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Shmuel, Shalosh Shanim Nechlu Beishamu Beisilel, Halolu Omrim Halach Kmosenu, Halolu Omrim Halach Kmosenu. There were great debates between the Academy of Hillel and the Academy of Shammai. Hillel and Shammai themselves actually didn't have so many machloksim. They had a handful of machloksim. Hillel and Shammai. They were the Rashi Yeshiva. But their Talmidim in the next generations, so they had many, many arguments. Yotza Baskol, the Umra, Elu v'Elu divrei Elokim chayim. So Abaskol came out and said, everyone's right. Everyone is speaking the words of the living God. But halacha kebeis Hillel. So asks the Gemara of Chimeachar, Elu v'Elu divrei Elokim chayim. If they're really both right, and therefore there isn't really a reason to choose Beis Hillel over Beis Shammai, because Elu v'Elu. So mipnei maz zachu Beis Hillel likvo halacha kemoso. Why do we pass them like this, Hillel? Nochin ve'aluvin hayu. Because they're nice and they're sweet and they're patient. V'shonin divrayem v'divrei Beis Shammai. They learn and they teach their opinion. They teach Beis Hillel's opinion. V'lo od eloshim makdimin divrei Beis Shammai l'divrayem. They actually often teach Beis Shammai's words before they teach their own. They give respect to Beis Shammai. So that's the end of the Gemara. This is a very interesting Gemara. From the Gemara, it sounds like they're understanding that Elu v'Elu means they're both right. And that's why they have this big question. If they're both right, why are you siding with one? And what's the answer of the Gemara that we side with Beis Hillel because they're nicer and they're sweeter and they're gentler and they're sweeter guys? As of when does being a nice guy determine law? You know, it's very good, it's important to be a nice guy, it's important to be a patient person, but why do we paskin based on that? Isn't if somebody's right, they're right, they might be a jerk, but they're right. And someone else could be the nicest, sweetest guy, but he's wrong. Aren't we interested in the emes? Why are we, you know, we like good midos, but if we're paskining halacha, why are we doing it based on that? There's another big kasha, let me just finish discussing this Gemara, then I'll see if your question still exists. There's another big kasha, which Effie, I think, asked me this morning. What?
It's Jake.
Okay, Jake asked this morning, which is, isn't there another famous Gemara that goes against this Gemara? There's a famous Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Nun Tesamid Beis, that we're also probably all familiar with, that there was a great debate between Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, and all the other Rabbanim of his time. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, by the way, was a Talmud of who?
Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai.
Excellent. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Wow, quick, on the trigger there. Good. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, right? Remember, we did a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Oh, wait, how'd you know the answer? So the that was a great talk, by the way, to Sally. A lot of you guys missed it, I guess. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, it says, we're okay with that, right?
Yeah, okay.
Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I know I told you about the embarrassing guys in public, and I felt bad about it. I just want to make sure we're okay. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, it says in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had 5 talmidim. Remember, and we interviewed them. What's the best thing for someone to do? What's the greatest mitzvah to have? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's top talmid, one could argue, there's actually discussion about that, but Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus was known as the Gadol Hador. And there was a big debate. The Tanur of Achnai, a certain type of oven, parts and pieces, is it Tameh or is it Tahor? Discussion on the Gemara. And there was a big, big debate. Rabbi Eliezer had his opinion, and the Chachamim had their opinion. And Rabbi Eliezer, trying to win them over with halachic arguments, he's not able to convince them. So he stands up, and he says, if I'm correct, so the river, or the tree, the carob tree outside the Beis Medrash will show that I'm right. And the carob tree uprooted itself, walked a few steps, and replanted it. And they were unimpressed. So Eliezer says, if I'm right, the river, the Euphrates River, will show that I'm right. And the river started flowing backwards. Maybe that's why there was a machlokas there. And they said, we're not impressed. He said, the walls of the Beis Medrash will show that I'm right. And the walls of the Beis Medrash started to shake and fall in. They were unimpressed. And then Rabbi Eliezer said, if I'm right, God will be my witness. And a heavenly voice came out from heaven and said, Rabbi Eliezer is right. Now what are they going to do? Comes Rabbi Yehoshua, another Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Eliezer's bar plukta, and he stands up on his chair, and he pounds on the table, and he says, what does he say? Lo b'shamayim hi. Torah was not given to heaven. Torah was given to us. It says in the Torah, Achrei Rabim Lahatos, Rabbi Eliezer, you could be right, but we're the majority, and you lose. Lo b'shamayim hi. So Tosfos on that Gemara asks Jake's question, which is, what are we going to do about the Gemara in Erevin then? The Gemara in Erevin says there was this big machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And how did we end up ruling like Beis Hillel? Because a baskol, maybe it was the same baskol, same speaker, from the story in Bava Metzia. And here, the baskol says, we go like Beis Hillel. What do you mean we go like Beis Hillel? They're both equally right, Elu v'Elu. Isn't this going against the principle of Lova Shamayimi? So Tosas gives two answers. One of them you will probably be okay with because it's the standard understanding of Lova Shamayimi. The second answer is quite unique and really gives a totally different perspective on Lova Shamayim. The first answer of Tosfos there in Erevin, in Bava Metzia is, you're correct. Lova Shamayimi. We don't listen to baskols. So in this big clash between the Gemara in Bava Metzia and the Gemara in Erevin, which Gemara wins? Which Gemara wins? Bava Metzia wins. We don't go based on baskols. Lo b'shamayim hi. Okay, so what was going on in Erevin? So Tosa says, really, al pi halacha, al pi dinei Torah, Beis Hillel wins. Why? Because, you just need to know this historical fact, says Tosos, the majority of students were in Beis Hillel's academy, in Hillel's academy. They were the rabbin. So if you were just going straight based on Achrei Rabim Lahatos, the halacha is with the Beis Hillel. But there were those who raised the issue that even though Beis Hillel's yeshiva is much larger, Beis Shammai's yeshiva has a few smarter guys. You know, in brain power, Beis Shammai's yeshiva is stronger. Maybe we should go with Beis Shammai. Comes the Baas Kol and just confirms to us what we already know from the Torah, which is, no, you go based on Rove. Meaning, we don't listen to Baas Kols to go against the Torah, or to decide when we don't know what to do. But when we know what to do, and we're just getting nervous, oh, maybe there's a counter-argument, a baskol is able to discard a counter-argument. So why do we paskin like Beis Hillel? Which is funny, because the Gemara asks why we paskin like Beis Hillel and doesn't say this. Why do we paskin like Beis Hillel? Because they're the rabbin. Oh, maybe we should go like Beis Shammai because they had a few smarter guys there? Comes the baskol and says, follow the Torah. fact, the Bas Kol is actually supporting the concept of Lo B'Shamayim Hi. The Bas Kol is like reminding us, Lo B'Shamayim Hi, you have the Rov. The halacha is, go based on the Rov. That's Tosos' first answer. Tosos, wait till I finish this and then I'll take your question. Tosos has a second answer. Tosos' second answer is, really, we go with the Gemara in Erevin. We do listen to Bas Kol's. Hey, if God himself weighs in on an issue, we're going to go with God. So how come in Bava Metzia, we had this whole dramatic story of Rabbi Yoshua saying, Lo B'Shamayim Hi? No, you don't understand. That was a very, very specific situation. Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, Elu B'Elu, one wasn't right, one wasn't wrong, and they were both right. Maybe even the Chachamim were right from a certain perspective. But Rabbi Eliezer was the Gadol Hador. And if he, like, puts God on the spot and says, God, testify that I'm right. So God issued a Bas Kol, but only out of respect for Rabbi Eliezer. That Bas Kol, when Rabbi Yoshua said we don't listen to Bas Kols, he didn't mean we don't listen to Bas Kols. What did he mean? We don't listen to this Bas Kol. We're right. We're the Rabbim. We're right. And this Bas Kol, this is like magic. You know, he did a tree trick, and he did a river trick, and he did a walls of the base measures trick, so he did a heavenly voice trick. And God agreed to go along with it out of respect for Rabbi Eliezer. But in general, we know based on Bas Kol's. Lo B'Shamayim Hi is very limited in scope. Really, we go based on Bas Kol's. So this is a fascinating machlokas, two opinions in Tosfos, all within the sugya of Lo B'Shamayim Hi. When Jake asked me this morning, I said, Jake, we're not doing the sugya of Lo B'Shamayim Hi. So this was all begetter introduction to address Jake's great question. But we are going to come back to it in our sugya. By the way, I heard a very beautiful ha'ara. I heard a shir on this topic once years ago here in Chalvin from Rabbi Rosner. And he quoted Rav Rosenzweig. That Rav Rosenzweig added an extra nice little ha'ara here, which I think has a nice musser point, and also is a very nice pshat in the Gemara. He said that the Gemara, when it's explaining why we possibly make Beis Hillel, as I asked before, strange. It makes it sound like, oh, we possibly like nice guys. So Rosenzweig said, no, that's not the pshat. Because they were very patient, what does it say? They always taught their teachings and Beis Shammai's teachings. In fact, they taught Beis Shammai's first. So Rosenzweig said, you know what that means? It means that when they had a perspective on something, they didn't just take their perspective and run with it and ignore other people's perspectives. They actually looked into other people's perspectives. They sat on them first and analyzed those first, and then they came to their conclusion. So you know why we possibly like Beis Hillel? Not because they're nice, but because they're right. Why are they right? Because their method of analysis is a better method of analysis than Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai was really smart, and they came up with opinions, and they went with those opinions. Beis Hillel knew that Beis Shammai was really smart. And therefore, the Beis Hillel always gave a lot of credence to Beis Shammai's perspective. And sometimes they looked into Beis Shammai's perspective and said, oh, Taka, that's probably right. And they went with Beis Hillel's approach. Beis Shammai's approach. And sometimes they analyzed Beis Shammai's approach and they thought about it and they still came to their conclusion. So the Gemara is actually explaining why they're more right. It's not because they're nicer. It's rather because of their patience and their niceness, it actually assisted them in arriving at the truth more often. Okay. So we have this Gemara in Erevin. Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. We understand why it doesn't have a problem with Lo B'Shamayim Hi, why that's not a contradiction. But the question that we still need to address is, well, what in the world does it mean, Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim? Does that mean that they're really both right? Is that possibly true? And this raises the question of truth. Is there objective truth in halacha? Is there not objective truth? I mean, was the thing tahor or tameh? You know, in the story of the Tanur Shel Achanai. There's another Gemara, which I'll just mention quickly. It's the Gemara in Chagiga. The Gemara in Chagiga is darshaning a pasuk. And the Gemara there says that you have this one's metaher, this one's metameh, and this one is machshir, and this one is mafsil. You have different opinions. And kulam meroa echad. So, again, here, it doesn't say elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. It doesn't say that expression. But it says they all come from the roa echad. Who's the great raya mehemna? Who's the roa? Moshe Rabbeinu, right, through Moshe Rabbeinu. They all came from Moshe Rabbeinu. Now again, what does that mean, they all came from Moshe Rabbeinu? Is the stinking oven tameh or is it tahor? If Moshe Rabbeinu was here, would he say it's Tamei, or would he say it's Tamer? What do you mean? It's all beautiful. It all came from Moses. It all came from God.
No, it didn't. Either the thing's Tahor or it's Tameh. Look into the halacha. Somebody's analysis is right, and someone's analysis is wrong. Yisrael Meir. What does it mean? Kula meroa achas. That they're all, everybody's good. Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. So I'd like to share with you, the time that we have, three perspectives on elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. That's why I numbered them as 1, 2, and 3. How did you guys do in terms of trying to clarify three different perspectives? Yeah, people were able to voice three different perspectives? Good. So let me share the analysis with you, and we'll see how you did in terms of if we came to the same perspective. Okay, the first perspective, which is probably the most surprising perspective, and that's why it has the least makoros, because it's certainly not the standard interpretation. I actually gave you two makoros, but they're both from the same person. So it's really one marker, but I was trying to beef up that side a little bit. So I gave you two things that he said in two different svarim of his. The Chidah, by the way, was one of the most prolific writers. We have a few, you know, we have a few like off the charts prolific writers in Kal Yisrael. One of them, let's say, was the Rishonim, was the Rokeach, early Rishonim in Germany. He wrote literally scores and scores of svarim, 50, 60, 70, 80 svarim. The Chidah also wrote 70, 80 svarim, an exorbitant amount of svarim, the Chidah. So the Chidah writes, he lived in the 1700s, so the Chidah says, there's one truth. There's one thing, there is an objective truth. Either, we'll always use this tanur as our example. The tanur is either tahor or tameh. So what does it mean, elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim? Maybe it's specific that it didn't say elu v'elu nechonim. They're both correct, because they're not both correct. One's right and one's wrong. So what does elu v'elu mean?
He said one perspective right and the other one sheds light on the other.
So what does elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim? They're all the words of the living God. What does it mean? Say it in your own words. They're all good. We're happy with everything. They all have value. Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim doesn't mean they're both right. It means they both have value. And I'm sure yourselves, you know, that many times, right, the greatest example, light is best seen on a black background. Because contrast is what generally allows us to understand things or see things in the best way. So the idea here is that the contrast of the other opinion allows us to understand better the right opinion. It's even a Gemara in Gittin, and we've spoken later in the Masechta, we've spoken about this in Bayit Ha'am, the value of making mistakes when you learn. There's a value to making mistakes when you learn, because by making mistakes and tripping up, you end up getting better. And you end up understanding, when you finally get to the understanding, if I would just spoon feed you, Maseches Gittin, if I would just sit here and just read the Gemara to you, it would go in one ear and out the other. But when you sit on it and you make a mistake, and then you realize how you made a mistake, and now you understand why this is the right way to read it, that builds it, it becomes more a part of you. So the learning process is better when you actually make mistakes and when you have contrasting views that you have to consider. What's the strength of this view? What's the strength of that view? Usually, I get better clarity in preparing shiur because of your questions. Because when you guys ask questions, it forces me to reconsider a different perspective. And oftentimes, sometimes I might realize I didn't understand things properly and you have the right perspective. Sometimes I know you're wrong. But by explaining to you why you're wrong, it helps me better clarify why the position I have is more correct. So that's the process, and that's what elu v'elu means. Elu v'elu means it's all good. We're all loved, right? Everyone's great. Everyone's beautiful. One of you is right, and one of you, exactly, kumbaya. One of you is right, and one of you is wrong, but there's room for everyone at the table. And it's important to also have those other opinions. According to this, you do have to go back to the Gemara in Bava Metzia a little bit and understand what was that bas kol then. You know, if the bas kol was telling us that Rabbi Eliezer was right, what does it mean that he pounded the table and said, no, 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 lo b'shamayim hi? What do you mean lo b'shamayim hi? If the Chidah is correct, that there's one of, it's not the Chidah, according to the Sefer Harein and Marin, which I know the person's name who wrote it. I looked it up, but I don't know who he was. And he quotes in both Makoros from this Harein and Marin. If that's correct, so then shouldn't we want to go with the bas kol? If you want to tell me they're both correct, so then I understand. You know, But if one of them is correct, and the Bas Kol told me that Rebbe Lezer is correct, why are we not going with Rebbe Lezer? So you're going to tell me, no, Lo B'Shamayim he means that even though we're wrong, the idea is you go when we're wrong. We have a little bit of a precedent for that. For instance, if the Beis Din proclaims the Rosh Chodesh, now it's a special din by Rosh Chodesh, but if they make a mistake and they proclaim the wrong day Rosh Chodesh, the halacha is that that's Rosh Chodesh. So if on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, if Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, if they proclaim Tuesday to be Rosh Chodesh, even though it's the wrong day, it's really Wednesday, Yom Kippur goes based on that mistake. Oh, but it's wrong. Doesn't bother us so much that it's wrong. Hashem gave Torah over to Klal Yisrael. We sometimes, though, are going with something that's wrong. That's how it comes out, according to the Chidah. Unless you learn like the second answer in Tosfos, which is that the Bas Kol wasn't really telling you the truth. The Bas Kol was just the Kvodo Shel Rebbe Lezer. But again, this is our first perspective. There is one single truth in Torah. God knows the truth. And maybe us down here, we don't always get to the truth, and maybe we're not faulted for that. But Elu V'Elu, Jibre Elu Kim Chayim, doesn't mean they're both right. But it means that there's value to everything. That's the first approach. Okay. Yeah. Right. That's because he was going against the psak of Beis Din. Beis Din had paskin one way. Rabbi Gamliel was the head of the Beis Din. He paskin one way. This is Rav Yoshua. The same Rav Yoshua who pounded on the table? I believe it was Rav Yoshua, I think, right? He's the one. Was Rav Yoshua ben Levi?
Was
Rav Yoshua ben Gamliel?
No, it was Rav
Yoshua
and
Rabbi
Gamliel.
Is Rav Yoshua and Rabbi Gamliel? Yeah, but I know, but he said it's Rav Yoshua ben Levi. I'd be surprised because Rav Yoshua ben Levi was Tanoim. Was Amoraim. Was the beginning of the Amoraim. Rav Yoshua was the Tana with Rabbi Gamliel. So maybe check it. Yeah. What? That's what I'm saying. I said that's a precedent, but it's a special din, right? But it's that idea. The idea that even though we might be wrong about something, if that's the conclusion we came to, it's fine. Yes. And even if we're wrong, according to the Chidah, even if we're wrong, 100%, yes. That concept, it says you're going to go to the Kohen Bayamim Ahem, in your days, you're going to go to the Kohen in your time. And, not Bayamim Ahem, but, in Lechaela, the Kohen Bosa, what's the expression? What? Yeah, but what's the Pasuk? The Lashon of the Pasuk? Bayamim Ahem, okay, it is Bayamim Ahem. And Chazal Darshan, you're right. Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmuel Bedoro. Which one was greater? Shmuel. We say in Kabbalah Shabbos, Shmuel was like Moshe Aaron. Shmuel was the greatest. And Yiftach, I'm sure Yiftach was also, you know, tremendous person, but not like Shmuel. But if you lived in the generation of Yiftach, you went with Yiftach. So you're right, and that would mean even though Yiftach might be wrong, but we go with Yiftach because he's the good old door in our generation. Okay, that's the first approach. There's only one truth. The second approach is that there are levels of truth. Does that mean that there's levels of truth? It's similar to the first approach. There is one absolute truth in heaven. There is. In Shemayim, if you asked Hashem and you interviewed Hashem, there is an approach that he feels is correct. But when Hashem gave Torah to Klal Yisrael, what he basically said was, I know that you'll be able to arrive at different conclusions using your analysis, and there'll be what to say about your analysis. So even if you don't end up getting the absolute truth, you can get to something which is close enough to the truth. Now, I know I said the other day in Shir that when it comes to truth and Sheker, it's absolute. Either it's right or it's wrong. I understand that. That's the big Chiddush here. The big Chiddush is that there is a certain MS in Shemayim, but when Hashem gave us the Torah, he was basically telling us that he is allowing for a certain subjectivity in truth. There's no Gemara that says this greater than the Gemara in Bava Metzia. Rabbi Yeshua was saying, you're right, Rabbi Lezer, and Rabbi Eliezer, you are right, but lo b'shamayim hi. Hashem allowed us, not allowed us to be wrong, this is the nuance from the first approach, but our truth, what we arrived at,
also has an element of truth to it, and it's good enough. The Ran in his drasha here sounds like that, I thought.
The Ran, in talking about this story, says that the hachra goes based on, we're going to introduce a word here, seichel ha'enoshi. I don't think he uses that term. We're going to use that a little bit later. Seichel ha'enoshi, which means human intellect. Godly intellect might arrive at one conclusion, and human intellect arrives at a different conclusion. And you know what? It's close enough to the truth that we can go with it. You know, sometimes, you know, someone explains something to you, and they're basically right. It's a little bit more complex than what they're saying, but, like, you're not going to get into it. You know, it would take, like, an hour to, like, add the extra complexity. And what they're saying is not wrong. You know, one of the greatest examples of this I often find, it's an amazing thing about Torah. If you take science in sixth grade, then you take biology in sixth grade, then you take biology in graduate school, you're going to use a different textbook. With Torah, it's the same textbook in sixth grade that you're going to use in yeshiva. It's just that there's so many added levels of meaning. So if a kid says to you, this pasuk means X, is he wrong? He's not wrong. We talked about this, like putting a stumbling block in front of a blind person. So if I go get a big block, and I put a sign on it that says stumbling, and I put it in front of a blind man with a cane, and he trips on it, and someone says, you just went against the pasuk, is he wrong? So it is a discussion of the Rishonim, but let's assume, like the Rishonim that say, no, that's an infraction of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mechshol. It's just that there are other interpretations as well. It's not the whole story. So using all of that as a mashal here, what the Ran is saying is that it's not absolutely wrong what you're saying. You could make an argument that it's Tamei or that it's Tahor. In Hashem's world, where he's, you know, like in our mashal, he's like the Berlin professor, Avdil. So what you're saying is not exactly correct. It's actually more complex than that. But there is an element of truth to what you're saying. Amazing. I'll take a question in 1 second. Let me just finish this one section here. This is, I think, almost explicitly said by Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Hakdama to Igros Moshe. I don't know how many of you got through it because it was a long piece. But Rav Moshe, in with tremendous humility, you know, Rav Moshe, if you don't know Rav Moshe Feinstein, so I don't know what your impression of him is. Certainly when I was younger, I thought of Rav Moshe Feinstein as like being very machmir. I don't know why. That was just always like the impression I had when I was younger. And I was like, a younger guy. As I got older and read more tshuvas of Rav Moshe, I realized that Rav Moshe was a tremendous maker in many, many areas. He has some very, very mechudash shitas. Ad Kedei Kach, there was a sefer written in poor taste called the Manel Igros, which was a response to the Igros Moshe, where he really attacks Rav Moshe tshuva after tshuva on many of the kulas that Rav Moshe had. Rav Moshe had a tremendous amount of kulas. He also has chumras, obviously. But he had a tremendous amount of kulas and a lot of very important kulas that we all rely upon. Just giving some examples. I just mentioned one or two. Probably his most famous kula is? Right, Chol Yisrael. Dina de Gemara, you can't eat milk that wasn't, the process wasn't washed by a Jew who was there. That's the halacha. Now, why do, so many of us, aren't we mocked on Chol Yisrael? Because of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe said that the FDA and the enforcement of the United States government is enough of a deterrent. We can rely on that. And we can drink the milk knowing for sure that it came from a cow. We don't have to worry that it came from something else. That was one, and I just was reading the other day a tshuva from Rav Moshe about a catering company that wanted to cater in at certain events that wouldn't necessarily, there would be other things at the event that weren't following halacha. Is the catering company allowed to take the job? And the straight analysis, the sugya, he goes through the analysis, is that you can't. And then he says, but I think you can for the following reason. That's very common in a lot of tshuvas of Rav Moshe. The Rav Moshe was very makom. And Rav Moshe came from Russia. He came to the United States. There weren't so many rabbanim, and he was fielding tremendous amounts of shilas. So he writes in his introduction, in a very humble way, that he's terrified to be a posek. Why should he, first of all, to paskin, and then to write it down in a book where it will be printed and it will be relied upon for generations? So that's a very scary thing. And how can I feel confident to paskin? Now, this is not like, false humility.
And Rav Moshe writes that he thinks that there's something called Emes Klape Shmaya and Emes Lahora. This is also a very important message, I think, in terms of humility. Rav Moshe doesn't say, oh, I'm an idiot, I don't know anything. Because that's obviously not true, and he knows that. Being humble doesn't mean you don't know your own strengths. He says, but I can't claim that I know what God thinks about Chol of Yisrael. I don't know what God thinks. And the sugya might be more, the Tanayim and Amorayim that debated this issue are much more intelligent than I am and knew a lot more and came from a background that I didn't come from, says Rav Moshe. Yet, I believe that there's something called Emes Lahora, which means you have to reach there's a certain threshold that needs to be reached in order to have the right to issue a psak. That level does not necessarily reach the level of the absolute truth in God's eyes. But it's enough of truth to be able to paskin. And therefore he says, I'm writing my sefer, I'm paskining shailas, not because I'm convinced that I have access to emes klape shmaya, is his term. But emes lahora, I do feel like I've reached. Which is a great statement of his confidence and his abilities on the one hand. On the other hand, recognizing his limitations. This is the Igros Moshe. The Ramban also, again, one second, I'll take your question. The Ramban also, in his introduction to the Melchamos Hashem, I think also along these lines, the Ramban says, I'm going to defend, you know, the Ramban wrote his Melchamos Hashem in order to defend the Rif from the attacks of the Baal Ma'or. And he says, I'm going to be defending the Rif. I just want to make it clear that I don't think the Rif is necessarily always correct and the Baal Ma'or is always wrong. The nature of Torah is that it's not like mathematics, that like 2 + 2 is either 4 or it's 5. One's right, one's wrong. He said, no, you can build an argument like this, you can build an argument like that. It could be sometimes the Baal Ma'or is correct. But I'm going to build cases for the Ramban, and I believe that I get close enough to the truth, Seichel Ha'enoshi, in human intellect, I feel like I get close enough to the truth that it justifies me writing the Sefer. But Yaakov Kamenetsky, in his Sefer Emes Liyakov, has a very beautiful analysis of a Medrash, that the Medrash says that when Hashem was creating the world, there was a war between Shalom and Emes. And that is a war that we all are engaged in sometimes. Sometimes there's the truth, and sometimes there's Shalom. Right? It could be that your roommate is acting in a way that's totally inappropriate, and the truth is that you should call him out on it, because he's wrong. But you know what? It's going to disturb the peace in the room. And sometimes you need to go with Shalom over Emes. Meaning, you need to swallow it and say, you know what, I'm really right, and I really should insist that I'm right. I think I told you this, I told you once that when you're married, since we brought up the dating, so we'll continue the marriage theme. When you're married, my father, the advice my father gave me before I got married was, it's more important to be nice than to be right. Many times, okay, don't share this recording with my wife, many times I feel like we have a discussion about something, I feel like I'm right and she's wrong. But you know what? Many times, it's more worth it to say, you know what, this is not like going to have such a major impact on our lives, and it's not worth getting into the argument. The most common time this happens is in the I told you so situation. Sometimes you say something, someone else says something else, it ends up that you were right, and everybody knows that you were right, and you need to add in that little like, told you so, right? Why? Because I'm an Ish MS. The MS needs to be stated. Well, you know what? In the war between MS and Shalom, you know, sometimes you have to disturb the peace for MS. You know, if there's something, if there's a real travesty, you know, there's abuse going on. And you know what? No one wants to rock the boat. Because, you know, Shalom. Sometimes the truth needs to be stated. But sometimes Shalom wins. So the Medrash talks about this big war between Emes and Shalom, and it says that Hashem took Emes and threw Emes down to the ground. What does that mean, Emes was thrown to the ground? So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says a very beautiful idea. That Emes used to be in heaven, which means that whatever God says, that's it. By throwing Emes to the ground, it meant that we can determine Emes based on ground calculations, human calculations, which means that even if the Torah says X, Hashem says X, even if Eliezer was right, Rabbi Yeshua was right, because lo b'shamayim, and therefore Emes is now in the ground. It's on human level. And if our human analysis gets to something, as long as it reaches Emes Lahora, as long as it's right enough, that's something that we can live our lives based on. So this is our second approach. Now I'll take your question. The second approach doesn't say that there's one truth. The second approach says there's one truth in heaven, but there's also something called human truth. There's levels of truth. And when you're dealing with levels of truth, heavenly truth and earth truth, so the Torah instructs us to go with earth truth. Yeah. One last perspective here, because I'm sorry, I'm going to go a few minutes over. But I don't usually do that, so I'm allowed to do it once in a while. I know I did it like twice this week, but I don't usually do it. So I'm just going to go over for a few minutes. The other approach is this very, very beautiful and famous Ritva. The Ritva gives a shame that Rabbani Tzarfat, I think, says a whole other perspective, which is a real mind-changing perspective on how to look at Torah and Halacha. The Ritva basically argues that there is no truth in heaven. Even in Shemayim, there are multiple truths. Why? Because this is what he says, explains the idea that there were 49 ways to be Metayer Sheretz and 49 ways to be Metameh Sheretz. Now, Sheretz is Tameh. That's the Halacha. But there are 49 ways to be Metayer Sheretz. Means that the nature of Torah and Halacha, and again, this is also might be what the Ramban meant. I'm not sure which category to put the Ramban in. When it comes to Torah, you can build an argument, and I'll give you the mashal that I would make, is that sometimes if you need a medical, let's say you have a medical condition, you go to a doctor, one doctor will say, okay, I think we need to do the following surgery with the following pills, and then the following, what's that stuff you did after you hurt your leg? Physical therapy. I think you need to do the following surgery, the following pills, and then the following physical therapy method. You might go to a different doctor who will say, I think you should do this surgery, take these pills, and do that physical therapy. Is it possible that both might actually heal you? 100%. Obviously, if one's saying, like, cut off his arm, and the other one says, like, cut off his leg, so there's a good chance that one's right and one's wrong. But sometimes with doctors, they're both right. This one might be more invasive, and therefore it'll take longer to heal, but it's got a better chance of it not coming back. And this one might be minimally invasive, and the healing will be quicker, but it might come back. So one isn't, they both healed the problem, but there's different perspectives. The beautiful mashal that they also often say is that you take a couple of people, you blindfold them, you put them in the room, and you put one, you ever heard this? And one of them, all three of them, you put them in a room with an elephant. And you ask them, these people are blindfolded, to describe what they feel. So one says, I feel a really hard, like, piece of, like, almost like bone. Why? Because he's touching the husk. Another guy says, I feel this, like, really dinky little, like, stringy thing, because he's touching the tail. And another one says, like, I feel like this huge, you know, soft mass. You know, he's holding onto the ear of the elephant. Are they all describing what they're feeling? Are they all telling the truth? Yeah, they're all telling the truth, even though they're all saying something else. Because different parts of the elephant have different, it has different body parts that feel different. So there are many, or what we would call multiple truths. And you know what? If Eliezer got to one conclusion, and Rabbi Yeshua got to another conclusion, they're both right. Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim doesn't mean one's right and one's wrong, but it's all good, like the Chidah said. It doesn't mean elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. What is what Hashem says? What is what we say? But Hashem considers them all good. It's that they're actually both right. Analysis is able to arrive at both conclusions, and there's nothing faulty in the analysis. Now, who do you go with? We go based on Ruach. But they're actually both correct. In Shemayim, they're both correct. So we've got correct in Shemayim, wrong on earth, but valuable. That's our first approach. Correct in Shemayim, but correct down here also, because there's something called Seichel Enoshi. The third perspective is that they're actually both right in heaven. And here's the conclusion, and we'll end with this. In our sugya, I think Elu V'Elu actually means a fourth thing. Because up until now, we've been discussing Halacha. In our Gemara, it's Metzius. Was it a hair? Or was it a... Don't tell me, in God's perspective, it was a hair, but if you look at it from a different angle, it was really a fly. You know, or you're touching one side of it, it feels like a hair, and other side... It's just Metzius. And this is a Rashi. Rashi in Tzuba says that we have a machlokas between two Amorayim about what a different Amora said. So, unless they were at different speeches, but if they were at the same speech, so it's very likely that if one said one thing, one said another thing is what he said, it's very likely that one got it right and one got it wrong. And that's not a problem. Elu v'elu here, then, is clearly going to be more like the first category of one's right and one's wrong. But, so here in our Gemara, though, what does our Gemara say?
Our Gemara says, no, here, they actually were both right. Why? Not because of like, oh, multiple truths in heaven, but Lemaisa, there was a hare and there was a fly. Which is the one that set the guy off? Okay, that could be a discussion. Maybe it was both together. But here we have Elu v'Elu, where they're both actually right in Metzius. I'll give you one other example and end with this. The Gemara has a debate, when was the world created? Was the world created in Tishrei? Or was the world created in?
Nisan.
Machlokes, in the Gemara. In Tfilos, there's a question of which Tfilos does this represent. Is it that the world created in... So Tosfos says they're both right. Elu v'Elu and Jemilu Kempani. What do you mean they're both right? How can the world have been created in two different times? Either it was created one time. So Tosfos says they're both right because, you know, what would you say? When was a baby created? Is the baby created at conception when the parents are together and they conceive of the child? Or the baby comes out of the mother? When, okay, so we're not getting into like the debate about abortion right now, okay? When was the baby created? So certainly on the one hand, you could say, what do you mean conception? That's when the baby was created. That's true to a degree, but when the baby's born, you know, when someone says like, oh, we had a baby, not, right, like, it's like at the bris. Oh, when was the baby born? 9 months and 8 days ago. Nobody says that. We had a baby 8 days ago. Oh, what do you mean? But you conceived the baby 9 months ago and 8 days ago. So, Tosfos says, Hashem conceived of the idea of creating the world, whatever that means, in Tishrei. But Lemaisa created the world in Nisan. So when we say when was the world created, there's an element of creation in Tishrei, there's an element in Nisan. So this is an example where they're actually both correct. And this is the Elu v'Elu, Dibrei Elokim Chaim, in the most literal sense, more than the first three ways that we said. Not, oh, they're both right in heaven. One's right in heaven and one's right on earth. One's right and one's wrong. No, they're actually both correct because there is a possibility for it to have been a hare and a fly. Okay. Everyone have a great day. A little bit of